Welcome into the Swarmcast here on the ESPN Houston YouTube channel and ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. This episode is brought to you by Blue Star Tequila, the world's first and only night harvested tequila. You can find it near you at bluestartequila.com. Joe George, Will Kunkel here to talk Houston Texans.
This is a good football team.
They lost.
Not only on
they lost
the field,
again.
But off the field.
Yeah, they lost again, and well, they lost a quarterback, Will. We'll see how bad it is.
This team has been bad offensively, and they've been healthy. Health has not been the issue. It hasn't been like, hey, we got to figure out a way to do it without player A, B, or C. They've had all the players. They just haven't been any good at all. Now they don't have the right tackle, and now they don't have their quarterback.
It's going to be really challenging. Like, there's no other way to cut it. And we'll look back at the Broncos game and talk about what's ahead of, you know, concussions are weird. Like, could CJ play this weekend as we're recording this right now? It doesn't feel like that, but we saw, you know, college sport, but Arch Manning come back in a week. We still see quarterbacks miss 2 to 3 weeks, if not longer, from concussion. So it's really hard to anticipate how long CJ Stroud is going to be out for. But this Broncos game was just ugly. And it was the same problems that they've been having all year, that they can get into the red zone or they can cross the 50-yard line, but they can't convert anything. They kick, what, 6 field goals in the game. They make 5 of the 6. They lose 18-15. It's really bad offensive football. And we talked about it last week of, you know, it was kind of a make or break game here a little bit in terms of, like, who are you going to be? What is your season going to look like? And, well, you repeat the performance against the Seahawks and we're back to square one. And now I think we officially know who the Houston Texans are.
Yeah, there's not another – if you look at another team that's playing the way the Texans are playing and you look at their record as an outsider, you're not like, hey, that's a playoff team. It's only diehard fans are like, we still got a chance. We still got a chance. There is no chance. This is not a playoff team. Texas ain't going dancing. They ain't going to figure out the offense. And that's the more clear point to me, is that the offense is what it is. We're in week 10. We're more than halfway past the season at this point. And DeMeco Ryans, your head coach, is still saying, we got to find out a way to get the ball to our best player in Nico Collins. How is that possible? Mm-hmm. How is it possible that you can't gain this many feet, 3 feet, several attempts, and then you save the quarterback sneak till fourth down? Not on first down, not Woody Marks, not Nick Chubb, but two times to British Brooks. So what the hell does it matter even if you out and get Breece Hall? What are you going to do with him? Not give him the ball on the 1 yard line either? It's another player to avoid getting the ball to. Jalen Noel can't get one single target. You go 3 of 17 on third down conversions. This offense is what it is. There is no like, oh, we're close, oh, we're on the cusp. Hard no. It's over.
Yeah, and it's weird because normally, like, you would look at a game in which your quarterback gets a concussion, you would say, hey, like, you know, we'll give them a pass in the moment because, well, he has a concussion.
Yeah.
You'd say, this is the Davis
Mills
offense.
Yeah, it was obvious. Give him a week to adjust.
But the problem is that it was that issue with C.J. Stroud, and it's been the issues that they've been facing all season, you know, getting down to the 1 yard line and not being able to convert. And I think what frustrated me the most, and where I think I guess I have to just strongly disagree with DeMeco, is he's talking about, you know, it's you know, basically man versus man, putting bodies on bodies, moving the line of scrimmage. But they can't do it. I get what he wants to do. He wants to be a tough team. He wants to be the team that can pound the ball on the 1 yard line and get 3 feet and cross into the end zone. They're incapable of doing that. And Nick Caley has shown time and time again he cannot adjust. When he's gone through different running backs, he's gone through different quarterbacks. Their QB sneak design is awful. It's the weirdest one I've ever seen in the NFL, where the quarterback, whether it's Stroud or Mills, is taking a step to the right and trying to follow into the left. Like, you're intentionally going backwards when you only have to go forward. It's bizarre. They don't do a tush push. They don't do anything. I don't get what the plan is. And I think the reason why I don't get what the plan is because, well, I don't think there is a plan.
There is no plan. It's like,
or it's a really stupid plan.
Let's try this one. Let's try that one. You're just rolling dice. You're playing craps, and all that's coming up is crap at this point. Then you do run a QB sneak with Davis Mills when you're at the 2 yard line on first down. On the 2 yard line, you think Davis Mills is sneaking and pushing a pile 6 feet? Like 6 feet? CJ's not doing that. Jalen Hurts might not even be able to do that. First and goal from the 2, and you run a sneak, and then you run a jet sweep to Nico Collins. That's the best play you have in your book to get a touchdown to your best player, is a jet sweep. It gains 1 yard. Holding's called. It's now 2nd and 12. You run it now with Woody Marks, and you gain like a yard. And then you drop back and pass, and you're sacked. And that's your next red zone attack. Mm-hmm. Like, it was, they were 0-for-3 from the red zone. They only got in there 3 times. And it was as bad as humanly possible. It was not like they were from the 20 and couldn't punch it in. It was from the 1 and then from the 2. It's just so bad. And then so listen, to address what you were just talking about, yeah. Like D'Amico wants to be a move body type of guy. I like that. I want that. The problem is you aren't that. But honestly, you should be able to do it once. And you're so bad up front that you can't move bodies on the interior. Okay, so that's out of the way. You now have an issue with your mental capacity as a coach to where you're calling a plays that you can't succeed at, and then you lose the mental battle on the final possession of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Minute 14 on the clock, you throw two incompletions, one completion that ends in bounds, or did he get out of bounds? They ran a ball. It was something stupid.
He slid out of bounds?
Yeah.
That's what Higgins did?
Nonetheless, you get the ball with a minute 14 left in the game, and you hold on the ball for 24 seconds, give the ball back to the Broncos. Like, it's an abysmal decision process. Like, you're not even making the right choices, and let alone forget about the battle up front, for God's sakes. You can't even make the right choice going into that situation.
Yeah, I think it was clear. Like, the first play of that drive, instead of it being a 10-yard out route to, I think it was Christian Kirk, and it's incomplete pass, it should have been some kind of easy completion, whether it's a screen pass or just a run play, just see what you get on first down.
Yeah, or like a draw.
Yeah.
Or like whatever, like busted play, cool.
Yeah, and so like if you get 1 yard, okay, well that means we're going to just try to force Denver to use their timeouts. We're going to try to punt the ball as far down the field, but we're going to make them burn their timeouts and give them even less opportunity to score the game-winning drive, try to get to overtime. Instead, you just go for it on first down, which that's fine too. But when you miss the first one, and then the second one goes out of, and then the second one is completed to Jade Higgins, and he goes out of bounds, rookie mistake there. You put yourself in a hole where it's like, that's bad coaching, that's bad play calling. And frankly, I think it's mostly bad play calling because if they would have gone with that approach with C.J. Stroud, I get it. But Davis Mills,
and then you double down on it with another pass, and a short route incompletion.
Like, run the ball there, make them use a timeout.
That's what I swore they were going to do it.
Like, yeah.
All right, now you got to run it. They got to force them to use their last timeout. No, we're going to let you save that timeout, and then we're going to punt it. You fail before you even get onto the field. And we talked about this after the Seattle game. You're fail, like when you walk into a building, a team after 15 days should know what they're about to do, how they're about to attack this defense, and how they're going to have success. It seemed like they had no idea going into Seattle how to do that. They had no plan. And that's why I was saying it felt like they lost the game before they even entered the stadium. Same situation here. You're losing the game before the play call even comes in because the decision process is so flawed that you're asking guys to execute a bad decision in the first place.
Yep.
It doesn't make any sense. Not only that, in what world was this offense going to drive 60 yards to get into field goal position? Their previous five drives, they had one first down, they had 44 total yards, and five punts. But now they're like, got it. We're just going to dink and dunk all the way down the field and pick this defense apart.
Yeah, it's a strange process. I mean, look, where the Texans are right now, it's whether they, C.J. Stroud misses one game, misses two games, misses no games. The season at this point is cooked, and it's everything we're talking about right now. It's the execution in the red zone. There's the execution of the offense. The offense has not improved in any way, shape, or form.
Worse
throughout the entire. Yeah, I agree.
But it's mathematically, systematically, it's got. I did a breakdown on Kicking It with Gunkel the other day. The defense still elite. It's actually gotten worse. If you'll go to my channel right now and look up this graph and the way I edited it, from week 9 to week 10, every team kind of shifted to the right, even so much so that F-Ball Insights, who put this out, EPA, how good you are basically offense, defense, shifted to the right that they had to move the XOY axis. The two teams that didn't move that I really took note of, I'm sure the Saints didn't either, but Texans and Titans.
Yep.
The Titans went up better defensively. The Texans kind of stayed exactly where they are and went backwards offensively. It's week 10.
Yep.
You're British Brooks is your guy.
It's crazy.
No Nico Collins in the second half. No Jalen Knoll.
At all.
I don't get it. I understand losing the battle up front. I don't understand why doing it several times on over knowing you're losing it. But I can get on board with we're just not good enough. I can't get on board with we're so stupid and we continue to make dumb decisions to not put anybody in position to have success.
Yeah, and I think it's because you have a first-time play caller that just doesn't know how to pivot. He has a plan in mind. I think so does D'Amico, and I think it's a level of I think it's just stubbornness. It reminds me sometimes of the stuff we're seeing with Bobby Slowick last year, where, you know, Nick Haley, like Slowick, has a thought in mind, and I think as does D'Amico, of what the offense for the Houston Texans is supposed to look and operate like.
I wonder.
I just don't
I think D'Amico might, like, as in, I would like it to be a physical team. I think we know that that's what D'Amico wants. Is that what Nick wants?
We don't know.
There's nothing I can point to be like, that's what they do well.
Yeah, they don't have an identity.
So that then brings us to the fact that, so a couple weeks ago, remember, I asked D'Amico Ryans what their identity was. He said their identity was moving the ball, which, by the way, is not what your identity is. That's the goal. This week, Sarge asked D'Amico Ryans what their identity was, and he said, we're just not good enough. Yes.
Damn.
Yeah, I know, and that's the problem. That's what we've been talking about. That's why we haven't been so positive, because we're week 10, well, and the offense is atrocious.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's nothing to be positive about at this point within the offense. I mean, you're wasting a Super Bowl-caliber defense, flat out. Best defense in the NFL, at worst, top two, and you are wasting an opportunity to get to the playoffs, to take on Josh Allen, to take on Patrick Mahomes, to make a legitimate run at the Super Bowl. I'm not even sure. We asked at the beginning of the season, when we started this podcast, for them to be confident.
They're so incompetent.
I'm not even sure you need this Texans offense to be competent because of how good the defense is. Like, they could be like fifth grade education level competent. I think they might have been fine.
To be fair, they were competent in the Broncos game to a point. But then the incompetency was so great that getting into the red zone and down to the one wasn't enough, which is a really weird thing to even comprehend, because they got into scoring position, or at least the other side of the 50 with Kaimi Fairbairn, hit five field goals. When your defense literally has to be perfect and Kaimi Fairbairn has to go 6 for 6, like, it speaks volumes about the third phase of your game, the offense being so bad.
It's so far behind.
I asked Azeez Al-Shaair after the game. I said, is it frustrating knowing that you have to be perfect to win? And he said, no, because you strive for perfection. I don't know anybody that doesn't want to get an A+ and that thinking 89 is good enough. So, ironically...
Great answer.
It's a great answer to not throw your offense in the bus, but incidentally, he kind of said, an 89 is not good enough.
Yes.
Everywhere in the world, an 89 is a passing grade, except if you are the Texans defense, an 89 is not a passing grade. That's kind of the irony behind his answer, is that, yeah, we got a 90 and it just wasn't good enough. Like, bro, hell no.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like, you see even some, like, it's you know, sometimes I think it's more fans than it is anyone in the media or anything like that, where, like, they're even like, the defense can't, hasn't been able to get stops when they've needed to this entire season. They point to the Buccaneers game and this game. I'm like, guys, the offense, like, is asking them to be perfect for the entire game because they're putting up so few points in an NFL game. I mean, they're one of the worst offenses in the NFL this year, as you pointed out. And you don't even have to look at EPA. You just use your eyeballs. You can look at any generic stat in the league and be like, they're terrible. They're in the category with the Tennessee Titans, a team that you're going to play in 2 weeks potentially with Davis Mills.
Here's a stat the only stat that matters is points scored. Mm-hmm. So with all their games, I believe, I'm going to do this off the top of my head, I believe they're scoring about 21.6 points per game, which is middle of the pack. Mm-hmm. However, I don't like doing this, but you can do this because the two games were such an anomaly. If you remove the Ravens and Titans game, they're averaging 16 points per game. That would be second worst in the entire NFL. That's how bad the offense is. Because we know that Ravens-Titans game was not a true litmus test of what this offense was. Mm-hmm. We know that 70 points in two games, 35 points a game, is not what this offense is capable of. So if we remove those and we take the average of all the games and all the points they scored, including the 26 against the 49ers, it's 16 points per game.
Shucks.
That's how perfect an NFL defense has to be in a league that is catered to the offense. Yeah, I would like them to get the last stop, and it was bad.
That'd be nice.
But, like, I'm not going to be like, ha, nine out of 10 times you were great, but what an idiot on the 10th one.
Yeah, I mean, my only criticism is, like, why is Henry Toto out there instead of EJ Speed? I mean, he's as flat-footed can be when R.J. Harvey runs past him, and he's responsible for the big bow next run as well.
He came up and stopped on the route as if it was good. I don't know.
He just, like, he stopped. He sat
on the route as if he was going to stop. And RJ was like, I'm
going this
way. It
was pretty obvious, I think, for everyone watching.
I'm going that way.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Texans, you can find stats every week now where it's like, it's kind of baffling how bad the offense has been. This one, Texans Cap tweeted this out. found this graph. It says, and it's touchdowns scored with two or less yards to go to goal. The number one team in the NFL is the Indianapolis Colts, tied with the Buffalo Bills. They've done this 11 times this year. They scored from 2 yards and in. That's great. That's the best in the NFL.
11.
Hold on. Let me stop you there before you tell what the Texans have done. The Texans have 3 rushing touchdowns on the season.
Yikes. That's terrible. I didn't realize it was that few.
Yeah.
The Houston Texans are 32nd on this list. They are the only team in the NFL in 2025 that does not have a single touchdown scored with 2 or less yards to goal. If you get 1 this season, you're a 500 football team, Will. Now, you could look at all these games. Like, they've had opportunities in almost every game they've lost on the short yardage situations in the red zone. All you have to do is get 1 this game, and you win this game against the Denver Broncos. And it's over. And you're worried about, hey, you're 500. You're worried about when C.J. Stroud's coming back. Can they survive versus the Jags? And now, you could, in theory, have like the ultimate optimist conversation and say, hey, they could win the next 2 games with Davis Mills. I think that's on the table. I know, it sounds crazy.
I had to double-check that stat. It's true.
Huh?
I had to double-check that rushing stat.
It's crazy. Like, 3 rushing touchdowns?
0.4 rushing touchdowns per game.
Ugh.
For a team's identity that is a physical rushing attack?
Yeah.
What?
And that's where like, I...
You're literally the worst rushing attack in the NFL.
That's where I still think, like, looking at this season from a big picture perspective, it's like, okay, you think about this team moving forward. Mm. When I hear D'Amico Ryans talk about, we want to be a team that moves bodies. We want to be a team that can... That's also saying we want to be able to run the football. They've been saying that since last year, since D'Amico got here, they've wanted to run the football. I just look at this roster and I'm like, feels like they were failed by their GM in a lot of ways. And failed by whoever hired Nick Caley. I think the reason why you're in this position is because of your OC hire and because you did not address the offensive line adequately enough at any point. I think it is naive to focus on the 2025 offseason and say, that's why Nick Caserio should be on the hot seat. For me, it's not that. It goes back to 2018 when he got hired, or 2020, whatever it was. It has been a problem since the day he got here. He has not been able to adequately address it. I do not trust him at all. You have a left tackle, I think. You have a right tackle. Would you trust him with the 14th pick in the 2026 NFL draft to draft a guard, Will?
No.
Because he took Kenyon Green.
But he has to, right?
So like, he has to. So like, that's
going to happen.
Yes, and another GM should make the pick.
You think another GM should?
I think another GM should make the pick.
I don't know the answer on this one. I genuinely don't. So I don't know who the next GM would be. I don't know if the next GM wants D'Amico Ryans as their head coach. I don't know that the GM would even have the say in that because D'Amico is so beloved in there. Mm-hmm. And I don't think D'Amico should be fired. I almost don't know that Nick Caserio should be fired, but I'm closer to Nick being gone versus D'Amico if someone has to be gone. And then there's Nick Caley. Like, there's a lot of... And the reason I'm so conflicted is because there's been a lot of good from the time that they have each walked in the building.
Totally agree.
So I don't know what to... like, the Deshaun Watson haul. Rebuilding the defense. And yeah, I put them both together. I think that they work in tandem. I think they consult each other. So the offensive line is equally as much D'Amico's fault as it is Caserio's, and the defense building up is equally as good D'Amico as it is Caserio's as well,
mm-hmm.
because they worked that tightly together. And the hiring process is both of them for sure. I don't know what the answer is, and I know it's a little bit of a cop-out. Even with Nick Caley, I don't think you should fire mid-season, only because you're going to ask Gerard Johnson to call plays under Caley's system. Like, that's not fair.
I think it's useless to me at this point. Like, I've kind of flipped on that. Early in the season, I was like, get rid of Nick Caley, move on as fast as possible.
Now, if you were early because you had, like, life, potentially.
Now, I have concerns, and I don't know, it's just because it's Jeremy Branham's opinion that Nick Caley will be back next year. But it's kind of started to creep into my mind about, like, maybe they will just, like, bring him back and give him another opportunity.
As it sits right now, if it maintains, there's no way.
I would hope the answer is no way.
Why would it be yes? What's his reasoning?
They like him. He went to John Carroll.
They liked Bobby Slowick.
And they got rid of Bobby. But it's, will you fire another OC or you want to give him another chance? Like, do you look at the problems? We just don't know I don't know why he's here. So that's why I'm like, why, like, would they for sure fire him? So at this point now, I want to make sure, like, he needs the rest of the season. He needs the final 9 games of the year to show some kind of development and growth to have the opportunity to keep his job or prove that he is ultimately the problem with this team. And unfortunately, he might have to go a game or two without his quarterback, which is going to make it even more challenging.
Where would you put money? That he gets fired or not fired?
Fired.
For sure.
Yeah.
Especially if there is an obvious hire out there, which I don't know that they would even make after this hire. Like, Mike McDaniel is the obvious move.
Yes.
I don't know that it's obvious to them, but if he's out there, no matter how it goes, Nick Caley might be gone.
Yeah. My concern with this offseason would be that, like, they just do the same thing again. Like, they don't, you know, if the Browns keep Kevin Stefanski and Mike McDaniel decides, I don't want to go to Houston, I want to go somewhere else. Because the thing about this job is, this OC job is now an unstable environment for the coach themselves, 3 OCs in 3 years. But also, I think it would be fair to assume from a job candidate perspective, like, to look at the Houston Texans and be like, if I come in here and I fail, not only am I getting fired, I'm probably also watching DeMeco get fired. Because that's why they're getting fired. Like, just feels like that's the path we could be headed down, and why this job might not be very attractive to a guy like Mike McDaniel. Like, does he want to go from Dolphins head coach to 1-year Texans OC to back on the market? Like, where does his career go from there? He's a quarterback coach in Los Angeles. Like what is the Mike McDaniel career path? So, I don't know. This offseason is going to be the end of the season. Offseason is going to be fascinating. Like, I won't even.
We're 10. We're talking about that.
Isn't I
that,
know.
That, I think we had, one of us had a line to some expect. To some degree of, like, if we're talking about XYZ by week 10, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
And now here we are. Just to play devil's advocate on that, of it not being desirable, maybe it's extremely desirable because the bar is so low. You have such an elite defense.
It's true.
All you have to do is fall forward 3 yeah. feet and you've done your job.
It's true.
Maybe that's that.
It is
then
a low
bar. And McDaniel's back to being a head coach.
Yeah. It's a low bar. It's going to be. And that, to me, is like, that's the focus now of the rest of the season, is because I'm with you, the playoffs, it's a pipe dream at this point. Like, are you mathematically limited? No, but it does start with the fact that you have to go 2-0 the next 2 weeks. You have to beat Jacksonville. You have to beat Tennessee. You have to get back to 500 at 5-5 through 10 games and then start to continue to win as C.J. Stroud gets healthier whenever he returns. And, like, that to me is where, if he doesn't play this weekend versus Jacksonville, which, again, I don't think he's going to, he's also not going to play against Tennessee because, well, you've beaten Tennessee Titans with a backup quarterback before. So,
Case Keenum.
Yeah, it'd be nice if Case Keenum was here because Davis did not look good.
Man, it just – and Colts go out and get significantly better.
Yeah.
Jaguars get better with Jakobi Meyers. They're coming in here. Like, they're not going to beat the Jaguars, are they?
I don't think so, but it's Trevor Lawrence, so, like, nothing would shock me.
But I'd rather have Trevor Lawrence than Davis Mills and Nick Caley.
100%.
I mean, 100%. We are in such an ugly spot right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, it's tough.
But it's such a bummer.
Yeah, it's a bummer because it feels like this season is so much. It still had potential. Like, I think, you know, last year the Texans were getting Super Bowl hype and it was premature, obviously. This year that had gone away. It was like, it was just, can the Texans, you know, get past to where they'd been so far and what does that look like? And now it's, I really never thought we'd be in a position where CJ's getting hurt at this point in the season and you're also 3-5. Like, before the season, I would have said, hey, if you're 3-5, it's because CJ got hurt early in the season, not because you can only beat defenses that are either atrocious or extremely beat up. Because that's all they do. Because even when you're going through the stats earlier, like, I have a hard time not putting that 49ers game in the same category as the Ravens and the Titans game.
I know, and I can't remove all their successes.
I know.
So, like, I'll give it to
them.
Yeah,
you got to give them one.
But it was obviously a very beat up defense. I think there was a better glowing review of our defense than it, because you're taking on still a Kyle Shanahan offense. Mac Jones has been completely fine. You shut down Christian McCaffrey. You slow down Greg Jennings entirely. Like, you dominated that game defensively against a pretty competent offense, and you made them look even less than pedestrian. I think you went up against a very banged up. By the way, no Patrick Surtain, and you still can't design the play to go to the best receiver in the game.
I know, because, like, early on in the game, like, that first drive, I mean, they find Christian Kirk on a 3rd and 8 for a 1st down. They find Christian Kirk on a 4th and 2 for a 1st down. CJ's finding Nico. Davis Mills found Nico. Nearly got his head taken off, but he found Nico.
Yeah.
That was a tough hit.
That was hospital ball.
Shocked he didn't have to leave the game after that one. Mm. But it's, yeah, you couldn't take advantage of Patrick Surtain being out of it. Texans are 1.5-point favorites at home on Sunday. Have you seen the total for this game?
41.
Lower.
39.5?
Lower.
Oh, my gosh.
37.5 points is the total this game.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, you're talking about...
I mean, I bet... I'll. You know what I'll bet?
What is actually, that, 19 to 18?
Gee whiz. That's ugly football. Like, that...
Yeah, that's what they're expecting.
This was ugly football against the Broncos on both sides.
Yeah.
And I would say it was... Like, Bo Nix looked horrendous until he looked good enough. Like, he wasn't good at all. Man, this Texans team, though, is so in trouble without Tytus Howard and without C.J. Stroud. They've been healthy all year, and we've seen what they've been doing. Now they're missing two of their most important players.
Thing is, Will, you kind of forgot a player who's not at practice as we record this. They're missing their most important player.
Braxton Berrios.
Kaimi Fairbairn.
Oh, yeah.
They might have another kicker.
Matthew Wright.
Yeah, they might have another kicker this weekend. Look at his Wikipedia page. Google Matthew Wright kicker because it's the only way you're going to find him. That's what I had to do. Look at his Wikipedia page. This dude's been on 30 teams. Since 2020.
Why didn't they just sign Zane Gonzalez, who lives here in town?
Great question. But Matthew Wright's third team this year. Kaimi's not officially out this weekend, but, like, you needed Kaimi to win the Broncos game.
What does he have, like, a stubbed toe from kicking the ball so much? Like, happened?
I know, lower body injury.
That's your best offensive weapon.
I know.
By far.
By a lot.
I wonder what the, oh, my God.
Yeah, it's very hockey of them to go lower body injury. All right.
Typical, though.
Texans win this weekend?
No. What's it matter? Why the hell do I have to make a pick? What's it matter?
I'm going to make it anyways. I'm going to say yes.
I don't think they win.
I'm going to say Trevor Lawrence, pick six, maybe times two this weekend. Maybe Derek Stingley looks a little better in run defense as well. We didn't even touch on that today. We got a short episode for you guys today. So we'll be back with you guys next week talking all things Texans football. It'll either be a 4-5 team or a 3-6 team, and the season could be getting worse and worse and worse and worse. He's Will Kunkel. Where do they find you?
We have time for real quick.
Go ahead.
If they end up going 2-2 in this four-game stretch after the bye, which a lot of people said they needed to do, is playoff watch back on?
Well, then they have to win the next two.
No, next one.
Nah, you got to be 500. I think you got to be 5-5 for playoff watch to be back on.
Okay. All right. Kicking It with Kunkel on YouTube. Just find me there.
All right. I'm Joe George. You can catch me Monday through Friday, 3-6 on ESPN 97.5. with Jeremy and Joe. Thanks to Blue Star Tequila, our sponsors for this podcast. You can find it near you at bluestartequila.com. Just go to the website, type in the search bar Houston, find all of the bars and liquor stores. You can find it in your neighborhood. We'll talk to you guys next week. Thanks for watching. Peace.